Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burge, and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. Except today we're doing something slightly different. We are continuing on with our culture series, reading book club series thing, and I'm joined by my girlfriend, Juliana. Say hello to everyone.
Hello.
And today we're going to do a little bit of follow-up on the last episode that we did when we talked about, what was the last one, Consider Phlebas. And I've got a few little notes to share about that, and then we'll get on to Accession, which is not the next book in the culture series. We're reading them out of order. If you want to know which order we're going to read them in, you can check it out on goodreads.com and check out the SFBRP listener group there. There's a thread you can follow in the discussion, or listen to, was it episode 201, where we introduced the culture
Yes.
series reading book club thing, whatever it's called. I think I should bring up the page. What's it called here? The culture series book club discussion, in the introduction episode, was there in episode 201. So anything, any follow-up that you had from the previous episode, anything else about the culture? Because I've got just a few things that I made note of here. Some fun things in the discussion group. Someone said the clear air turbulence was a play, kind of like a jinx by the person who put it on there. I mean, we're presuming you've read this book, the previous book here. Clear air means easy in, easy out, and turbulence means, uh-oh, suddenly everything goes wrong and people die. That's from Isabel.
I thought it was really... Clever idea.
Well, that's the cool thing about, you know, Ian M. Banks' writing, is that you think, oh, is that just a little play on words? And later on, it comes back and it's like, well, yes, it's of course... Like somebody else said, oh, if I'd have realised that he called the ship on the megaship that they landed on in Consider Phlebas, it says, I noticed that Ian M. Banks used the adjective Titanic in the megaship section, which would have been a clue to what was going to happen if I'd noticed it the first time I read the book. And so often that, you know, these times you read it through a second time, it's like, oh, that isn't just a throwaway line. I mean, it could be a coincidence, but if so, Ian M. Banks puts about 50 coincidences in every chapter, you know, which obviously are intentional plays on words, etc.
Yeah. Which makes it really, really difficult to get everything in the first read. This is what I noticed with Accession now.
Yeah.
You read something and then you think, how important is that? I mean, you don't even think about it. You just read it,
yeah.
And then you don't know how important anything is.
Yeah, and it's really tricky. And it turns out,
keep it in your head.
And it turns out in Accession, like, almost everything is important. Anything that anybody does or says or thinks, it does come back. And does it? But a bit more about Consider Phlebas. I just made these other two notes. I can't remember where I got these from, but there are other thoughts that I guess I had and didn't get around to sharing. One idea is about the external threats, or the ways that the culture fights against people. And going all the way back to the play of Games, when Gergay goes to Azad and he wins by being a culture. Like, he wins by playing that game like the culture is, and the Azad loses because Azad tries to play the game how Azad is as a culture. And it's the same with the Adirans compared to the culture, and Belveda, who is the culture agent in Consider Phlebas, she is again just doing stuff and just acting like the culture, you know, like the way she does it. But Horza loses by being non-culture in Adiran. It's like, doesn't matter what you do, if you're going up against the culture, it's like, don't fuck with the culture. If you do, and you're not playing the culture the way that the culture, you know, if you're not playing the same game as the culture, it doesn't matter. The culture is always playing its own game, like, separate from others, with its own set of rules. You know, all these other, like, more strict empires come up against them. And you would think that... And also, it plays into the character that Horza doesn't like drones or artificial minds, but he is played... Like, he is just as programmable. Even as a human being, he is just as programmable as any drone or artificial intelligence.
He is like maybe even
more so. Yeah, that's the thing, because he is thinking, biology is the way that it shouldn't all just be this. But because he is ignorant of, or maybe he's not ignorant, he's kind of willfully against, like, the idea that, you know, computers run things, Anyway, I just think it's kind of a weird, he's a weird character because it feels very much like people just push his buttons and get the exact response that they think they should get. And they do get, you know, it works.
Yeah, but
anyway.
This is what happens with humans.
Yes, of course, it's what happens with humans.
He's just a substitute to represent the human kinds of people in the culture as well.
Yeah, anyway, that'll bring us straight into, because again, I want to touch on that a little bit in this review. We're talking about Accession, and the setup is something big and spooky comes out of nowhere, something older than the universe itself just suddenly pops up. And the culture, and when the different civilizations in this part of the galaxy, the in-play civilizations, I quite like the idea of that, that it's not just the culture who are hanging out in the galaxy. There's lots of others, and the Affront are coming along, and there's the, what is it, the Zelench? No, what is it called?
Elench.
Zetetic Elench, that used to be part of the culture, but they kind of drifted off because they didn't want to influence other non-culture civilizations. They wanted to be influenced by them and take in aspects of everything and assimilate as much as possible and to become a big mixing pot. It's kind of like an anti-culture. Well, not even an anti-culture, because they're not against the culture, but they thought, well, we'll take the good stuff from the culture, but let's see what other stuff we can take.
Even if it's going to break us
as a civilization, well, it's okay because it'll only break a little bit of us because there'll be another part over there which is, you know, so there's different in-play civilizations, and when they find out about the Accession, it's called the outside context, and the outside context problem, they're like, oh, what do we do? And they all start like going, oh, we'll do this, we should check it out. And they all, but because it's like, right, it's kind of a long way out of the way. It's going to take everyone like a few months to get their ships there and to work out what's going on. And meanwhile, other stuff's happening. So it's one of the, this is like the first time, well, it's not the first time, it's like another culture level threat, or a threat that is unmeasurable. Like in the player of games, there was a threat which was, it wasn't really a threat to the culture because the culture really outstripped Azad technologically, and it was a long way away, you know, it was never a real threat. But the Edirans were a real threat to the culture, and the culture kind of beat them down and got rid of them. And then, yeah, this is the next big threat to come along. Any questions so far, Juliana? Because I know you have some questions about the plot of this one. But you understand the setup, that this thing has come through from another galaxy. No,
and
no, not
like,
another galaxy.
It's like then suddenly the culture is in the situation of how they put other societies into.
Yes.
Like, they normally are the superior society.
Yeah.
And they kind of see other societies and they influence them to develop and or to just stop or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they suddenly have a problem that they don't know if that thing, that contextual problem thing.
Yeah, the Accession.
Is,
yeah.
What it actually is. They
yeah.
don't even know what it is.
Yeah, there's some great lines from the beginning of the book. I made a note of some of them here. It says, beyond a certain point, there's simply nothing you could do, no plan you could draw up or cunning stratagem you could employ. You know, like when something comes along which is so far beyond you, which is, you know, it's the same kind of thing, like in the War of the Worlds, isn't it? It's like, okay, and the fighting machines are going across, you know, the common
the
and going up to,
and
then the heat ray comes out and you're just like, oh, holy shit, that's so far beyond anything that we've got. We have literally nothing that can stand up against that. And I think that's kind of a problem now with modern, you know, movies, that a lot of the problems that come up have to be outside context problems, because like there are very few military threats which pop up which, you know, humanity can't just go, oh, we'll just throw a big bomb at it, or we'll just do this, you know, like
yeah.
Independence Day had to have ships, they had to have spaceships with shields, because if there wasn't shields, humans would have kicked the aliens' asses, you know, they would have been able to do it. But you kind of need this you know, like this outside context problem, that turns up, and it's never really clear what it is, even though we are presuming that everyone who is listening to this has read this, because this is a read-along series, so
yeah.
The whole point is that you've read this book, so we're not going to care about spoilers. But I really did like, right at the very end, you actually get like the afterword is a little kind of appendix by the Accession. He was like, oh yeah, I popped over into this galaxy over here and something happened and we got this, you know, bits and pieces. I can't remember exactly his
and,
thing.
One question, because I've read this book as a paper book in German.
Yeah.
So some things are different because just of the set of the of the language.
Yeah.
And for example, the afterword is in German. You have capitals, capital letters in loads of words and nouns. And
oh yeah, in the English version, there's no capitals either.
There's no capitals and no interpunction.
Interpunction.
Isn't that the word?
Punctuation.
Like, I don't know. Well, no points, commas, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just one bit of text. And it was quite difficult to for me to then understand what's going on. But then, of course, after a while...
you worked out who...
Well, I worked out what was going on.
Yeah, but that's like, there's quite a few kind of little afterwards, like running through all of the different little, all of the different characters who are in it, you kind of get a little bit, it's the epilogue there as well.
I like the, because I was thinking, like, there's this bit where it says in these brackets, it said no translation in German. And I was thinking, oh, well, didn't they find a translation into German?
No, in English, it says no translation because it's being translated.
From that language, whatever that.
Yeah. Whatever that thing is, that you know, whatever using. It is, you know, you know, nested home, I received and I was asked and transmitted and expected without fear or favour of a failure. You know, it's like this weird thing, obviously, from a different thing, you know, I embraced, captured, self-submitted entities, you know, all these different kind of things. But again, it's one of those weird things, like at the end of Consider Phlebas, how Ian M. Banks writes this entire big epic sprawling thing, you know, like clashes of civilizations, galaxy spanning wars. And in here, like this thing that comes through and just in the epilogue of Consider Phlebas, he's like, oh, and now here are the things, you know, here's what casts everything that you've read, which you thought was going to be really important. Like this destruction of a ring. No, not the ring. The destruction of the orbital, you know, like the big thing and the destruction of a planet, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And at the end he says, oh, well, you thought that was important. Actually, there were thousands of those orbitals destroyed. And you're like, what? Like, and thousands of mines destroyed and thousands of these whole planets smashed. And you're like, oh, so what I read wasn't that important. And here you get to the end of it and you find out the accession. Oh, it's just popping through. It reminds me a lot of the idea of the novel Roadside Picnic, where, again, that's an outside context problem, where aliens arrive and then leave, and they're like, well, what did they leave behind? And for us, it's this marvelous, amazing technology, you know, all these power sources and things like that. It's like what they left behind. Like, if you had a picnic on the roadside, and then what did you leave behind? Oh, just some old batteries, you know, we had a drink and we had like a little gas canister and we left that behind as well. For us, it's just trash. And for them, it's a whole thing. And that's, and it does really set, it is kind of like a War of the Worlds kind of thing. Okay. Britain thinks it's the biggest and best civilization in the world. And I guess, in 1898 or whenever it was written, Britain was the empire, you know, it was the world controlling thing. And then, they have to face this outside context problem, even though it's not initially violent or at all violent in a way.
Yeah, right.
So, the plot. Shall we get into a bit of the plot here? What's going on? This is where you have a few questions.
So first of all,
I'm just
on the Wikipedia page with the list of spacecrafts in the Culture series,
yep,
where they are sorted by books. Mm-hmm. So let me just see the ships that appear in Accession.
Yeah.
What do you think? How many are there? 30 or something?
There's loads of them. Loads 50. Of ships.
So that was the first problem that appeared.
Yeah.
Because as individual they are, they have these complex names. That's just like names that you keep in your head.
Very, no, they're very difficult easy. Names. Yeah.
Difficult names. And some of them change their names as well.
Well, the most important ships do change their names.
But still, I was a little bit confused.
No, it is a thing that is very tricky because you first have to learn, you first have to go, okay, these are words that I know, but I've never heard them in this way before, and their names. But often in a book, if someone's got a cool name, you're like, oh, that's the cool name that sounds like this, or, oh, that's a cool name. And then you think, well, that's the character with the cool name.
Yeah.
But here in this
they
book,
all
of them have got cool names, really funny names like Anticipation of a Lover's Arrival, The Death and Gravity, Ethics Gradient, Honest Mistake. But like Ethics Gradient sounds a bit like, you know, the, like and like ethics gradient, use psychology, uninvited guests. What's the other one? You know, like
shoot them later.
Ethics gradient and unacceptable behavior. You realize that both of these are kind of warships or, you know, warlike ships that are left over from this thing. But yeah, it is. I do actually feel like it's difficult to understand, like to tell the ships apart or to keep track of what it is. There's a great thing on the XKCD comic where he makes these graphs of tracking characters throughout like trilogies of movies. Like, what was it? Like there's a Jurassic Park one. Okay. At any point you can look at this and say, okay, these two characters are together, but this one's over here being chased by a T-Rex, you know, and the T-Rex comes in and out, and you can do this. There's the same thing with, what is it? It's Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, and I think it's a Jurassic Park. You know, he does some of those things.
Yeah.
And also there's, was it the 12 Angry Men or whatever it is, where it's just like 12 men in a room and he just draws like, okay, they're all in the room all the time, all the way through, they're all in the room.
Yeah.
And this book would really be, it'll be really handy to say, okay, over here are the Interesting Times Club. Okay.
Yeah. Who is part of it?
Who are they? Who are the Interesting Times Club? And which one, why did this one say, like, what was it going to be called?
Who is a traitor? Who is not a traitor?
Well, I don't want to know who,
I
don't need to know who the traitor is right at the beginning. Because that's one of the main things that kind of drives the plot, you know.
And then there are minds who think they are traitors, and in fact, turns out they're not.
Yeah, they're all having, one of them's like, oh, I thought I was part of a conspiracy, but I'm not part of a conspiracy. It turns out, I think he was part of a conspiracy.
Yeah, but they used him.
Yeah, he thought he was joining Interesting Times, but he wasn't joining Interesting Times. He was joining, like, a splinter group of the Interesting Times gang, you know, and then there's the guy who takes over. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to be coordinating here. And then the Interesting Times gang turns up and goes, actually,
you're not.
We'll take it from here. Yeah. We'll form an entirely new group with every single member of the old group, except the guy who used to be in charge. That sorts out our problem. Yeah.
Also the second problem with the names and the ship is their, kind of their categories, because these are then, shortcuts like the GCU.
Oh, well, I kind of got used to that. Like
GSF, GSV. I got used to that as well. Of course, they're all translated in German.
Yeah.
So also these names are also translated into German.
Yeah.
And I kind of worked out, okay, there's this super big, ultra huge, mega ship.
They're the general service vehicles.
They are the super big ones where loads of other even also big ones fit in.
Yeah.
And then they have smaller ships which they produce and they build and construct and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So at a certain point I then understood.
Well, you can see, like, it says here that you can see on the GCU, well, not the GCUs, but the GSVs, they're like, you can see that how big they are by looking at the class. Now, and the way this works is by geographical features. Like, you get a mountain class, and a mountain class ship, the size of a mountain. Size of a mountain is pretty big, isn't it? No, but what's bigger than a mountain? A range. A range of mountains is bigger than a range? Like a mountain range, like the Himalayas are a mountain range.
Know.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Like,
oh,
you understand what I'm saying? Like that. And then you get, well, okay, you get the continent size, and continents are pretty big, and then you get like the, you know, the ocean size.
Oh, yeah, I see.
And the, you know, the ocean
tundra.
Size. Well, no, the tundra is a different, thing. I'm talking about just talking about GSVs. So you get mountains, ranges, ocean plates. Looks like a continental plate, like a tectonic plate, and a continent, range, ocean. Yeah, so you can kind of get a feel of the size of them when you work out what things are. But you don't really pick up, and that's not explained in the book. And so much of this isn't explained in the book. The first times that you read these ships having conversations, it's like reading a chat log with all of the IP addresses left in place.
It's like your brain, because at the beginning you don't know how to read that.
Yes.
So your brain actually reads everything, and then you have to try to put away all the stuff that you think it's not important for the conversation later on in the book.
It is important, it is
taken out at some points as well.
Yeah. And they say, do we have to read all the details that go with it? Can we just skip all the details? Okay, we'll skip all the details, but some of those details are important. You know, when you're actually looking at who is being included in there and how far away they are and why, and like when two ships are like included together, or when two ships are added to the same conversation at the same time, it's It's that kind of thing is important. Should we talk more about the ships while we're on it and the ships' minds?
Yeah.
Because this is, you know, famously, it's pretty well known that of all the culture books, this is the one that is most based on ship minds. Like it even says on the Wikipedia page, let me actually bring it up here for accession. I think it says it here. Is this where I just read it? It says the book, more than any of the culture novels, focuses on the culture's minds as protagonists. And this is the important thing, that in this book, the minds are the protagonists. As soon as anything turns up, it's the ship's minds which go, right, let's start things moving. Let's get things underway. Not just about going, checking out what the accession is doing, but also the subterfuge, the conspiracy about dealing with the affront. We'll get onto the affront in a bit as well, because the affront are pretty cool, or fun anyway. It's the idea of the minds, and what makes this book interesting is that we're having to, like, if it was all just told from the point of view of the minds, well, it can't just be told from the point of view of the minds, because that's what it would just be like. You know, what's her name? One of the main human characters.
The pregnant one.
Yeah, not Jenna. Dajil. When Dajil is like, okay, no, it isn't Dajil. The name isn't here. I should have looked up the names in. I just presumed it would be in the plot summary here of the thing. But who's the woman that they send after Jenna Hofen to?
It was just here.
I can't remember. Anyway, but they send this girl. I say this girl because she's obviously younger than Jenna Hofen, and it's like, okay, you go and pick this guy up, and the reason you have to do that is because of this, this, and this. And she just reads a chat log between the minds.
To get up to date,
and it had to be translated for her. Another way, and if it wasn't for the humans in the book, the whole thing would just be translations, because it would be like this. Hello, there's an accession over here. We're the Interesting Times gangs. Okay, let's get sleeper service on it. Hey, sleeper service here. Hey, that's good. Problem solved or problem done, you know. Yeah. That's what it would be like if there weren't humans going around like messing things up. It's okay, you don't have to find the name.
It's something with a Z.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, we'll call her Z from now on. We should have made a note of that. But so what was I gonna say? Yeah, there's only one biological character in this book who is a protagonist. Everybody else is being controlled by the ship's minds. Jenna Hofen is being controlled by the ship's minds to do what he wants to do. The people, everything that he does it, you know, the Zed girl that we just said who was going to, she had to look like Dajil to get and follow him. And then there was another one which that also was sent to do the same thing. You know, another woman who was sent, because there was two of them. There was two women who looked like, who were made to look like Dajil, who had to go and pick him up, or maybe three or something like that. There was the different factions of minds within special circumstances.
Oh, like, really? I totally.
Yeah, you know, you remember when he was in the party
when
place?
He was on that place there, and there was this other woman. I thought she just looked by just.
Yes, but when he arrives, it's like someone meets him, and she looks exactly like him. It's like, well done, special circumstances. And he just ignores her and goes off and has his own orgy that he's going to pay for next time he comes back. But then. Right. And then later on, Zed turns up, or whatever her name is. She turns up, but at the same time that she turns up, there's someone else who, you know, when they let that monster free to go like that, who also looked like him and is saved by him. And we're thinking as the reader, oh, that's Zed coming to talk to Jenna Hofen, but it wasn't. It was another person who was made to look like her. So you realise that even within special circumstances, there's probably like at least three factions, or at least two factions trying to get him. And of course, one of the factions wants the sleeper service to get to the accession and to be there before, you know, to sort it out before the affront get there. And the other, they're like the other guys, don't want the sleeper service to get there, so they're trying to stop Jenna Hofen to get there, because the only reason that Jenna Hofen needs to be there is because the sleeper service wants him to be there, and that's his, you know, that's the thing. So, like, every single thing that they're doing, the affront, all of that, all of the affront are being controlled by other ship's minds, the Steely Glint. No, what is it called? The There was a really good wrap up here by Isabel. She said, "The first time I read it, I didn't realize that the Steely Glint was a member of the Interesting Times gang, but was working against them, and that the Steely Glint was trying to prevent Bayer, which is
Hofen,
from getting to the sleeper service. So the sleeper service would refuse to use its fleet of slave ships, so the affront would have time to commit more atrocities, and the culture would have an excuse to squash them. The Steely Glint wasn't interested in the accession at all, was it? It was just an excuse to entrap the affront." Yes, which kind of, like, once you understand that, which you only get at the end of the book, suddenly all of these other little things plop into place, and you realise that
Steely Glint.
The Steely Glint. You don't even remember the Steely Glint. Or what?
The problem is they were all in German. And,
yeah, but the Steely Glint's the one who commits suicide right at the very
end,
because he was, I mean, it's difficult to keep track of, but that is the plot. But in the plot, all of the humans and all of the affront and anyone biological is just a pawn. It's just another piece in that are being controlled by the minds. And the only one who isn't, actually, I think, is an interesting character, the guy with the wings.
I did not really understand his point there.
He's the only character who is not a ship's mind who was controlling anything at all, or
what
who
was
had
he
any
doing?
Impact. He saw that because the first drone, the only drone to survive first contact with the accession, was thrown well out. You know, he managed to, you know, eject himself out.
Yeah.
And then he was picked up by this drone was picked up by the affront. He splashed himself on the front of the affront onto the front of the affront craft to make a little diagram, a little, like, leave his coordinates.
Mm.
And then when the affront ship went into Tyr, Leffid saw those coordinates and said, "Hey, there's something interesting out there."
What did he do with it?
He told the culture representatives, "Hey, you should go out there and check this out." And when they went to look in that place, it wasn't the coordinates where the affront met the drone.
It was
the coordinates of the accession itself, because the affront didn't know the accession was there.
No. Oh, I thought they did.
No, they didn't. All the affront did was find the little drone, and the drone flew into the front of the affront ship.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
didn't give anything
that.
Else away, because that where the drone was at that point, he'd been drifting through space for a while.
Yeah, there and was he wasn't, the Elench drone.
The Zetetic Elench, that's where he wasn't where the accession was. So the affront ship, which was trailing the ship called? It is complex. And again, this is what it says here on Wikipedia. Reviews. Most reviewers praised the book's ideas and witty writing, but some complained about its complexity. When you read it the second time, it's not that complex.
Yeah.
It's just the story is kind of hidden beneath these layers.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's told out of time.
It's definitely a book to read twice. And I know that. I mean, I read it and I now know, okay, now I know roughly how it is. And now I want to go back and read it again.
Yes,
to
but,
then.
But this is why I wanted to put that quote out there before. Beyond a certain point, there is simply nothing you could do. No plan you could draw up or cunning stratagem that you could employ. And all of the plans that are being drawn up and all of the cunning stratagems that are being employed in this book have actually got nothing to do with the accession. It's all got to do with the affront. It's all got to do with the Steely Glint and the Interesting Times gangs. It's very there are no stunning cunning stratagems to employ against the accession.
Yeah,
there's just nothing that they
so
do
you
has
mean,
anything got to
so
do.
To me, what the accession actually is in the book is
a MacGuffin.
Is actually how it describes the story for us.
It describes the story for us, but like there is nothing you can. But also, it kind of describes what humans are like in the face of the bigger threat or the bigger thing, like the minds. There is simply nothing any human can do against the minds, and there's all of the minds do this. There's one point where all of the capabilities of the minds. There's this one scene where I can't remember what the name of the because I finished this book a week ago and Juliana finished it like 4 days ago, so more than a week ago now, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I can't remember all of the different character names, but the ship's avatar who's throwing rocks into the sea, do you remember that?
Yeah.
And he throws it wrong and he throws it really high and then gets another rock and throws it really quickly and it bounces and they smash off you again and you think, oh, he's just showing off. But then you also see the ships displacing. They're going past each other at thousands of times the speed of light, and as one ship passes the other, they displace displaced the human. No, they displaced the entire ship into the other ship. You know, and you're like, wow, that is a lot of power that you just expanded. And you realize it's like hitting stones with stones, shooting bullets out of the air with other bullets has got like is really easy compared to displacing an entire spaceship to the insides of another entire spaceship.
And you mean for us now, the culture seems to be like the accession for the culture.
What ships' minds are to us is what the accession is like to the culture. To the culture. There are no plans we can make. There's nothing. And what I thought was interesting about Leffitt is that he is the only human. He is the only like human level character who has any impact on it, because he happened to be the one who was having sex in the spaceship and looked out the window at the exact time to see the a front ship going past, because the front ship hadn't spotted that. And
itself.
Tia, the front ship hadn't spotted that itself. Mm. But also, more importantly, Tia, where that happened, is not a culture place. Like, there aren't culture minds there. You know, you remember, it's sort of like this place where minds can't exist. It's like drones can't go there, minds can't go there. So no mind could have seen it in Tier as well. It kind of felt artificially. Like, it was artificial how constructed the situation had to be for anyone without a mind, like without a ship's mind, with just a human brain, could have any impact or any influence over anything at all. It's like, okay, it had to be a drone who knew the Zetetic Elench script, who put the thing onto the front of the front ship to then bring it here and put it there and show it there, and it couldn't be in culture space. It had to be in a neutral territory. Otherwise, why go to Tia? Like, why did they go to Tia? You know, all of that kind of stuff.
So it was nearby. All just a big plan.
No, it wasn't all a big plan. I'm saying Ian M. Banks, when writing the book, has to, like, he's written the rules of the world. He's written the world of culture, like all of the rules of the culture, so big that literally humans have no function.
Yeah. So we can't overview the plan.
No, we can't overview the plan. Like, the whole book itself is showing us how useless we are in the minds.
It does. But it does show me that.
Yeah, but right? to contrast that, you have to have at least one character do something which isn't controlled by the minds. But even that now feels contrived, that Leffitt had to be having sex in a spaceship. I realise that, if you remember Minding Tomorrow, there's a scene in Minding Tomorrow where the main character, and Nicholas, is in space and he has sex, then looks out. After having sex, he looks out. And it's like he sees a major plot point for later on. But after having sex in zero gravity and looking out, I was like, when I wrote that, was I thinking of this scene in The Accession where this guy has sex in zero gravity and then looks out and sees a major plot point, like a major weapon for later on? I often think that about my books. There's so many times now that I read books that I read like 10 years before I first wrote my novel. And I find a novel, I'm like, did I copy that? I don't remember copying that. Like, but of course there must be so many things in
like all influences.
All influences, yeah.
So first of all, the woman, we didn't find the name, is Ulva Zeich.
Yeah, Zeich.
Ulva Zeich.
Yes.
It's spelled a little bit different in German.
In the English it's with a Z, yeah.
And
Ulva Zeich, yeah.
What did I try to say? Oh, I forgot it.
Have you got the ulcer on your lip again?
Because it's fine.
Are you speaking about? Anyway, what other questions have you got? Yeah, have I explained the plot enough? Have we gone through the plot enough that you understand what's going on in broad strokes?
We are not mining about.
No, everyone's read the book. Everyone who's listening has read the book. So, and if not, this is really helping them out for when they read the book.
So at the end, I can't remember straight away where I read this, but that one ship is going into the Accession.
No,
Which one is it?
No, he doesn't actually go into the Accession. He casts his brain into there. He copies his brain. He transmits his brain into the Accession.
Which ship is it?
That's the sleeper service.
No, before that. No, the sleeper service, when he went closer to the Accession.
Ah, yeah, there was another ship inside him, wasn't it? Yeah, let me just look it up. I can't remember
which
one. And
that ship, I was wondering, is that ship something from the Accession? Like, the Accession had a ship itself into all the culture.
Oh, like, no, I don't think so. I don't think
That was what I've read there.
Let's have a look.
And I thought it would have been really clever.
Oh, I've lost my I had the page with all the ship names in it. Yeah. Oh, no, I've got it here as well. Yeah, so the Fate Amenable's Change, Fate Amenable's Change was the guy who was just hanging out beside it. He was like, hey, Zetetic Elench, don't do anything with the Accession. Don't do anything over there. He's the one who was always hanging around. He was the first ship there.
Or was it the grey area?
No, the grey area was the meat fucker. Oh yeah, maybe the grey area did go on the end, but I can't remember. Jaundiced Outlook was the one that the humans escaped on at the end. Anyway, it's tricky to see. It's tricky to understand what's going on. So yeah, other things, like we've been talking like for 30 minutes or something. I've kind of kept it very like a wide level. What scenes did you enjoy in the book then? Some favourite scenes in this book?
I liked at the end when, first of all, I liked the scene where it was explained that the sleeper servers had all the human sleepers and on board, and then created these big...
The tableaus.
Scenes of, like, the paintings.
Yeah, like, the ships themselves are artists.
Yeah. And then when that avatar is walking around its own ship.
Yeah.
And walks into that war scene and like all these this idea in my head is just really really fun image,
like human sculptures,
to use the humans who are like useless there.
Yeah, they're not useless. It's just,
but when they sleep, they're just hanging out
and they're sleeping on the sleeper service.
Yeah, and that made a really fun idea. And then also when it went back to that place, and then the other ship that was kind of following it.
Yeah, I got this here. The Yawning Angel. This is a fun scene as well.
When at some point they go to that place and the Yawning Angel. It says, oh yeah, there's a week, we can hang out here now, and it gets rid of all the passengers and all the people there, and then turns out, okay, the sleeper service got rid very quickly of its stuff.
Well, because it was it was slowly offloading people, and then it was just okay, it's just going to displace everything off in one shot.
Exactly. And it was way too quick, and then suddenly it turns out, oh, now it has all just...
Yeah, but it's once again one of those things where, like, there are, beyond a certain point, there's simply nothing you could do, and that's kind of like that's right in the middle of the book, like about halfway through the book, and it really does explain this thing that the Yawning Angel is right, okay, I need to do this. I need to call back my people, as long as it doesn't keep accelerating more.
Yeah.
Okay, I just need to do this. Oh, no, I can't call back my people. Okay, now I've got to displace them in. Okay, nobody's coming across that bridge. Now I've got to get out. I've got to do this. I've got to cast off this other mass. You know, I've got to do this. And it just, once it gets to this point, it's just like, oh, there's just nothing I can do here. The sleeper service is gone. Yeah. The sleeper service is just gone. 233.5 gigalight years per... I don't know, I can't remember the exact measurement of ship speed or something, but like he's just like do 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 do. I actually quite like the idea of some of the other scenes where it shows the technology. Like for example, at the beginning, the drone, I think in the previous episode I said the drones have different layers of brains, you know, they have mechanical, but that was actually this Zetetic Elench drone. I'm not sure if culture drones are the same as that.
I thought I've read it, yeah.
I think maybe they do.
I think at least also the ship mines also do have that. Because they could transfer different things.
No, the ship's minds exist kind of in the hyperspace, the hypersphere, the whatever it is. You know, they get their energy from the energy grid, like in the fourth dimension. And the ship's minds kind of exist in the fourth dimension. That's the reason why
they also could transfer their brains.
Their brain states, yes.
Somewhere else.
Yeah, they could cast them to other brain, they could back them up to other minds, to other ship minds. But all of that is taking place in a fourth dimension, or like inside that dimension. That's why in the in Consider Phlebas, when they're looking for the ship's mind, they could find it there because it was like a singularity point that they were finding. Even though it was just floating around and it was the size of a train car or a truck or something, they could still find it because it doesn't fully exist. And that's the difference between a drone's brain and a ship mind, is that a ship mind has to be powered by it from that fourth dimension, hypersphere space, and it kind of exists there.
Yeah.
And a drone is like more dependent on real computing and real matter, and so it's the size of a human.
Yeah.
Even though I think in this book it pointed out that ship, like drones, can't look like humans. That's why they look like, you know, fridges and stuff, is because and they don't have human faces, is because it seemed to be, I think it just hints at it in this book, and I don't think it's explored elsewhere, but it seems to be that drones aren't allowed to look like humans. Humans look like humans, or, you know, the human analog that we have in the culture. that's what humans... Biology can look like two legs and two arms and a head and a body, and drones have to look like, you know, old ones look like refrigerators and TVs and things.
And new ones look like and flat new ones, discs.
Yeah, discs or geometric shapes. Yeah. And I think that's kind of a dividing line. And yeah, and then the size. Like, if a drone can move around in human space... It's a drone, but when it gets big enough that its brain has to exist in the fourth dimension, then it becomes a mind, you know, a shit mind. I don't know if it's ever really delineated in that way in the books, but...
Not in that one.
Not in this
one. But also another scene I really enjoyed was when that little drone from that ship, when that ship was destroyed, and it was just this one drone which had a twin before, and then the twin was destroyed, and then it was floating in space, and then it was transferring its biological matter somewhere else.
Well, it had pulped its biological matter. It had gone too fast and pulped its own brain.
And then it was just so funny to just read about this little guy there in space putting his consciousness
back
like,
together
all over somewhere.
He was kind of reprogramming himself and working out, okay, what do I have as MASH? Shall I get rid of that? No, I won't get rid of that because that might come in handy later. How many weapons have I got? You know.
And how quick can I reinstall myself or rebuild myself?
Reboot himself.
It's just so funny.
But then he's going, oh, this little brain over there, I can't touch that because that could be affected by the accession. You know, that could be infected, but what shall I do with that? Well, I'll keep that there. You know, I can use this bit of antimatter. I can use this other bit thing. Yeah, so it's all this. It's and I really enjoyed, like, at the end of that where it goes and it turned back around. Oh, it says, and... it had been drifting totally unconscious for nearly half a second. Scary. And you realise, oh, this entire chapter took place over probably... no time at all.
Less than a second long.
And there's another time where, I can't remember the name of the warship, but it takes on the affront head on. You know, there's the thing he goes, well, the controlling mind will be in the third wave, I reckon, around about here, and kind of swoops through and takes out these ships over here, takes out, you know, remember, he does like this swooping round out this ship, and the control ship is like, oh, no, I'm not here, let's pretend I'm over here. Oh, no, I shouldn't have put me near the, and he takes out all the ships, and he goes, the entire engagement duration, 11 microseconds. It had felt longer. But then that was only natural, you know, that kind of idea.
Yeah, that's the one that was chased by them, wasn't it? Like the one that
it was
chased.
Being chased away and then turns around and takes, he's like, I am a warship. And I like the idea that warships are allowed to back up their brains and if they destroy themselves in battle, they get another body and their brain can be put in another body. And it's like, yes, that's what they do. Other ships, if they destroy themselves, it's like, we can't trust that brain. You know, it might have destroyed itself out of this or that, or it's, you know, it couldn't be backed up somewhere. Like, you know, because anything that got close to the accession, it's like, okay, we can't let them come back. We can't give them another body. We can't even take their brains on anywhere because it could be too dangerous. Whereas the warships are like, onwards, into the breach, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So
no, it's really good. I really enjoyed the individual...
ship's minds.
Minds and the conversations they had. It was like really fun. Like at the point when I understood how to read it, it got really fun reading it.
You actually, let me just say, you read this in the German translation, but you read the first two chapters or something in English, but it just wasn't going
to
work.
I couldn't. It was so difficult it was even more difficult to then keep the ships apart, keep the ship's classes apart, and what was going on in general was just too complex. Yeah. This book really was too complex for me to understand and to first read
in English. Yeah.
It was even... kind of too complex for me to get in the first read in German.
Yeah, well, I think this is the thing. I've read this book before. I think this is only the second time I've read this one. Like, most of the other culture books, on this read-through, I've read Player of Games twice before. I've read Consider Phlebas twice before. Use of Weapons twice before. Inversions I've only read once before, and then Matter, Service, Detail, Hydrogen Sonata I've only read once before because they come out more recently. and Look to Windward, I think I've only read once or twice. But yeah, this is like my only second time reading through Accession.
Yeah.
But it really helps that I kind of understand. I mean, it's weird that the main story...
Your brain still remembers the structure way better than if you have never read it before.
It did. I remembered like the underlying conspiracy, but I'd forgotten how much the affront were main play. I'd forgotten how much the affront were pawns in this one.
Yeah.
You know.
Shall we talk a bit about the affront now?
Well, yeah, let's talk about biology. We've done talked about ship's minds and stuff. Yeah, the affront. You like the affront? Jellyfish kind of guys.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I really like the idea of them, and I think they're fun. On one hand,
yeah.
On the other hand, they're like just stupid war, or like not war, but maybe like. Always want to fight guys.
Yeah, but it's after the Adirans, it feels quite funny how like that you've got this this Jennaer Hofen who's kind of he's a culture agent. He knows what's going on, but then he really admires the affront, and it's like again, it's like Bora Horses and Norbert Smorga.
Yeah, it's very similar. And it's funny that he's like when we first met him, it wasn't that diplomatic dinner kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you see that he has loads of fun with these guys. They are like not so as a culture.
But they have purpose in their life. You know, what they're doing is important to them. Nothing that any humans do inside the culture has any meaning or anything like that. The affront are, they revel in how important they are and how important they want to be. And are wanting to improve themselves and expand themselves. And I know we talked about this on the podcast about the prefix, where we were saying that what defines like consciousness is wanting to grow your knowledge and brain and experience and all that kind of thing. Does that make sense? You know, we're saying like about the alpha level, what differentiates alpha level sentience from beta level sentience is the striving to increase their power and brains and, you know, minds, you know, to get them bigger as well.
Yeah.
And I kind of, in the culture, I kind of see that, like, that's what the affronter want. They want to get bigger. That's what, you know, some of these other things. And the culture always seems to be, like, it's so conservative. Like, it's super conservative. Like, they have the rules in place. Like, ships are not allowed to look inside the brains of humans. They're not allowed to read their minds without permission.
They're
not allowed to feed... And you see the meat fucker, the grey area, is like, he's shunned because, you know, that's what he does. And everyone, all these other ship minds are so conservative. And every time that they come again, and that's what the Zetetic Elench, that's the opposite of them. They're like, hey, let's change our brains all the time. Let's bring all these things on board.
But it's funny because, like, you say that they are conservative, the culture.
Yeah, very conservative.
On the other hand, like, compared to our society...
Oh, yeah, totally liberal. No, I don't... Yes, I'm saying that they have got to the point where the culture cannot change in a way. I mean, it has to change in some ways. It will be forced to change in some ways.
Yeah.
But it's got to the point where it is so... It has such belief on what it is. And I think this is something that, you know, Ian M. Banks in these novels, he's kind of struggles with. It's sort of like, is there such thing as a perfect society? Like, what are the people's place? What are the ships?
Yeah.
All the culture is like a holding pattern for ships' minds to hang out in until they want to sublime. It's all it is just sort of like, you know, like they're not...
And then they become eccentric.
Yeah, if some of them come eccentric and some of them split off and find other things
so
to do.
It's so funny because for me, the culture seems to be like a perfect society idea
for boring people.
You don't have this weird separation between male and female, and you have like this hedonistic. Is that the word?
Yeah, hedonistic. Yeah,
kind of view of the world. You don't have money. Everybody can do what they want, and all this, the whole idea is great. Until the point when you think, oh. There is the perfect society until a certain point when it has it's too perfect, and then it is kind of like going against it.
Yeah, so when does a utopia become a dystopia again?
Yeah.
Is there such thing as a utopia? Because if there is a utopia, you could say the culture is a utopia. But why is it that all, like, so many of the main characters
get
turn
bored.
Eccentric, turn bored, go against the culture, fight against the culture, yeah. leave the culture, or just sublime away from the culture. That's the thing. Like, the culture is just, it's purely, it's like being middle-aged and middle-class and middle-aged. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. you grow up, you do all this exciting stuff when you're younger, like the affront and like all these other things, and yay, we're going to do this. And then you get to this really comfortable time. It's like, well, we're earning enough money now. We have enough yeah. money. We've got enough space. Yeah. And now let's just
live. And
then
you turn like 50 and then you think, oh, well, that was it?
Yeah, well.
Isn't there more?
It's sort of like, the culture is like, pre-midlife crisis, yeah. middle-class existence.
And would you say this is like the midlife crisis of the culture, the book?
No, this isn't, no.
No?
No, no. Midlife crisis... No, because it's not. It's an external problem. Midlife crisis has to come from
the inside.
Like, midlife crisis is like, we're watching Breaking Bad at the moment, you know, and we're thinking, he's not going through a midlife crisis. That's not a midlife crisis. He gets cancer, you know, and that yeah. changes him. That's not a midlife crisis. A midlife crisis is if he didn't have cancer and then was just like, a meth lab, eh? You know, that would be it. And the culture never goes, should we start making crystal meth? You know, like, do you understand what I'm saying there?
Yeah.
Like, anyone who does that becomes an eccentric and is, or it says here, the culture ulterior, you know, the forget it tendency, you know, like Tia, the place that they go to, where it's even more hedonistic. Anyway,
yeah.
we've got 50 minutes through this and we've hardly mentioned
anything. It's so weird because this book has so many levels of things that
of plot,
you would have to talk about that I think like even 2 hours would be still that we could talk about something. I think we should just say we reduce it to certain points. Things that seem to be important to us.
Yeah, but I think because this is a culture reading thing, so I don't mind bringing these wider points about the culture, and we can examine these wider points when we come back into other books. Like, what are humans contributing here?
Yeah.
What are are the ships gods? The ships are gods. They're you know, that's what they are. And there's the elder gods. You know, they even talk about like the elder. Things like why are they even caring about humans?
Yeah.
It actually even says there's this thing when they're talking about this. What's it? You know, the rule about not reading or interfering with minds. It sounds reasonable enough rule, but it suits the minds, not the humans. It kind of makes things tidy and easy for the minds not to read humans' brains or interfere with their like. It's a rule put in place so minds don't interfere with the minds. On other ships,
yeah,
and you actually see that at one point. I think it's when the ships. You know, when I said that he zooms through, and it's sort of like you know the entire engagement duration 11 microseconds.
Mm.
But as he zooms through, he kind of gets control of this other ship's mind. He kind of infiltrates
the
other ship's mind and kind of makes him commit suicide. I'm not sure if it is. That's exactly what's happening. But you're thinking, oh, did he actually just get in there and just fuck up another ship's mind so badly?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, what do you think about the story between
the humans,
Jenna Hofer and what's her name? Delia? No.
Let me bring it up here. There's Jenna Hofer and
Delia
and Dajil here.
Dajil.
Yeah.
What do you think about their story and the meaning of their story?
I thought it was interesting, but it did. It becomes like overly dramatic in a soap opera-y kind of way, which I totally understand. It has to get the attention of the minds. You know, this is the thing that the sleeper service, what's the sleeper service's other name before it was Quietly Confident. It was while Quietly Confident was still Quietly Confident.
Yeah.
That it had this run-in with these two humans, and it, you know, it had sex with Jenna Hofer, and you know, it's and it's like, oh, you're not a real human, you're a thing. And this is one of those weird times where you're like, oh, that's rude. It should be everyone who's human should be human, and he kind of gets caught out that it was actually a ship's mind, an avatar.
Yeah, this is what would you with the drones when you said the drones should not look human.
I don't know. I'm not sure if that's stated explicitly. I think it's just kind of like hinted at in this book. Mm. I don't remember, but it seemed to be like that rule there. But yeah, the ships avatars.
Yeah.
Is the way that it interacts with humans. And I think, but I was never quite sure how much Quietly Confident knew, because it couldn't look, these guys were keeping it secret. And Quietly Confident, which later became Sleeper Service, wouldn't be like the brain fucker, no, the meat fucker, and look into their brains. So did it ever know the reason for the the baby not being born, you know, like, because it seemed to be very much on Dajil's side, but Dajil was the one who killed the baby.
Yeah.
You know, but it, like I say, this whole overblown thing.
Yeah, I thought also it was way too, like, I mean, I knew quite from a certain point, quite at the beginning, that they obviously had
some history there. Yeah.
Some history, and she was pregnant of him, even though it was
quite
fun how it happened. But, and then
what you mean that they both became pregnant and they were gonna give birth within like within a month of each other or something, wasn't it? Yeah.
I mean, the idea is really fun. Hey, let's both become pregnant.
Female, yeah. That's a clever idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, I didn't see that coming, but I did see that they obviously belonged
together. You didn't see that they both became pregnant and then one of them stabbed the other one and killed the baby.
I mean, that was something that
Then you understand Jenna Hofen's kind of his mindset. Do you understand? Yeah. Like, that explains so much of his background and so much of their story together.
Yeah, definitely. But on the other hand, I really thought this whole story of Dajil, however she's called, she was just way too important at some points. And she wasn't even that interesting of a character.
No, but she was interesting to the sleeper service.
And also, I did not understand why sleeper service was so much into that woman.
Because it was the last thing of all. Because the ship's minds are following the stories of millions of people at once, but this was the thing that it kind of obsessed over. Like, it becomes an artist, you know, this was an eccentric, it became an artist, it did all that kind of stuff.
You mean it felt his its responsibility for that woman that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that baby. Was it actually born in the book?
Yeah, like right at the very end, in one of the epilogues. Oh, in one of the epilogues, it was mentioned. Yeah, but like, I don't know. It just really shows to me that the culture is this. Like, I think this is the last book where, like, these two books that I kind of put together, the first three books, because this is my reading order. I put these books together in a way to show the external threats to the culture. You know, you're like the Idiran, which is like a context problem, and then the out of context problem. These two books after each other, so you can kind of see the way that the culture deals with it.
Yeah.
And both of them, the humans seem to be.
And I think the out of context problem is the important story in that book.
Oh, yeah.
I think the human story.
Oh, it's a soap opera. It's a sideshow.
It has so many little side things going on.
Yeah.
And this is also, again, part of the distraction.
It is. You think the human stories are going to be important. It turns out it's just a distraction. Lefid is the only human character who does anything important to the main plot.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. The human building the little model ships on the peanut thing. I've forgotten it. I don't know. Why did I call it peanut? Pity? Is it called pity?
Yeah, the pity, yeah.
Piety? No, I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, because it's this big place where it's in German it's called loneliness.
Yeah. No, it just says they've been mothballed in a thing. It doesn't actually say here on Wikipedia. Never rely on Wikipedia to give you the little details that you actually want, because they talk about
It is weird to say that, but by reading this as a paper book,
which you got from the library, it's like we're living in 1995 or something, isn't it?
Made me like, now right when we do the podcast, it is so terrible because I can't look up any words. I can't look up any.
You can't search through it.
No, because if I do that, I have to look through pages and like side read pages, and it takes ages.
Well, I just got here. Look, I've got here bookmarks and notes, and I can just go look at the entire engagement lasted 11 microseconds. It's just right here as well. Anyway, so what was I trying to say about this wider point? No, it wasn't called piety. It was called something else. I can't remember what it was called. Anyway, it's a ship that's going through. There's a guy on there building ships. And this was, you know, it's one of those little clever things that he's building warships out of bits of paper from nothing. And then the sleeper service is building art out of humans. Yeah. So
it is building ships as
Yes, and it's building ships as well. Yeah. So you see both of those things.
The metaphors are there. Like,
it's not metaphors.
No,
it's
like
one-to-one things, yeah.
Yeah, the themes that Kurt.
That you see an eccentric person who builds ships, and then you realize this eccentric ship over here. That's another great scene where it's like, oh, and you're going to be accompanied by attacker ship number 73, another attacker ship 757, and this attacker ship 1912. And it's like, okay, the numbers go at least up to 1912, at least.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that you can, like, mathematically, the best way to go is if one ship is numbered 912, should double it. So there's at least, you know, however many thousand, you know, that's one of those things.
And also, there was this other character, Gravius?
Gravius, the bird.
The bird.
Yeah, never quite sure where, he was a spy.
He was a spy,
yeah.
The sleeper service always knew that it was a spy, so it only got the bits that sleeper service thought, okay, that information, he can have that information.
Yeah, and 30 years or 40 years of
and he never did anything. And then I didn't quite understand the relationship between the bird and then Ulver Zeik at the end.
Well, they kind of would. Another understand. Two were hangers on to the other hang. They were hangers
they
on
were
to
like
the hangers
on
story.
They were like both on the same level of importantness.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Anyway, I totally understand why Janair Hafoan wanted to become an affronter at the end.
And I like it how he,
because
how
it's he just becomes, much more. It's just much more fun.
And I like the game that they're playing with it.
What, they're snatching food off each other's plates?
No, the one they play this kind of tennis with the bat.
Oh yeah, the bat.
The bat
tennis.
Balls.
Yeah.
It's so funny, and then you, I mean, it is kind of cruel when you think about it that they smash these little bats because they don't have wings anymore.
We eat chickens.
I know, but we don't play and punch them. I mean, we don't play with a chicken and punch them. And
no,
then...
but we still get... Yes, I understand that. It's going again. Ian and Banks is going for absurd cruelty. And it's just like, oh, and what they like to do is just as they're walking past, just stick their tentacles up the other one's anus. It's like, what? And then you're like, oh, well, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Also, there's this one question I had about them. What is this gas sack? Gas?
Oh, because they can move around. Like, if they don't have any gas in their sack, in their gas bag, they can move around just on their tentacles on the ground.
Oh, okay.
But if they want to move easily, more like if they want to be small, they can let it down and go around.
Yeah.
But if they want to float around, they fill up the gas sack like that, and then they float along and kind of just push themselves along rather than
and
crawling.
And they don't live in oxygen and...
No, they live like on, you know, on
nitrogen,
gas planets and
whatever.
Stuff like that.
But this idea, like the whole idea of that whole species is really funny.
Yeah.
It's really fun to read.
Let me have a look at some more of my notes here. I think I made a few of the notes. I said every bit of technology says something about the culture, which is another thing I like about the writing. It's like the suit that he wears, which I think is quite funny. It says, it looks after you perfectly, but it couldn't help constantly reminding you of the fact. Typical culture, because the suit itself
oh,
has
that
a...
Hosa was wearing.
No. Not Hosa.
Mixing up.
Janair Hafoan.
Yeah, when he was at the dinner.
Yeah.
Which then, when he opened his mouth to get the food in. It,
yeah.
The idea was so funny.
Yeah, the suit is really clever.
Yeah.
But like I say, that says something about the culture, and there's
even that has a mind.
Yeah, and the drones, and yeah, like the idea about the twin drones. You know how the twin drone, you think, oh, he's gonna get out, but he doesn't. He throws his twin out, and he's like, well, that's the same. I'm the same as the twin, and you think, oh, that's clever as well.
Yeah, that's really good. It's a little bit like your twin song.
My twin song, yeah. No, that's all the notes that I made. I think I've covered everything that I want to about this. Yeah, it's a pity we didn't talk more about the humans, but that's not really, that's really not the important part of this book.
Though
it is an interesting story, it is, like I say...
And this is so weird because you spend quite a lot of time reading that. And
well, you have to have a way in. Like I say, the humans are the way into the story. Otherwise, it would just be chat logs from the ships moving around.
Exactly. But actually, this is the important story of that book.
What, the chat logs?
The thing about the ships and the accession and who is playing in conspiracy or not, who is used by whom, and all these fun things.
Yeah.
Well, and from my rate, I didn't rate it yet. I mean, I finished it, but I can't really say how this book is to me.
Like, how much you enjoyed it. You don't need to rate
after
it.
After a first first reading.
I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed the discussion. You know, there's lots in this book to really enjoy, and I think it's purely because I've read it before, and there was a few things that I didn't quite remember, but of course, as I was reading, I was like, oh, yeah, that was it. Mm. And that's why my reading updates that I've actually posted to Goodreads, oh, I don't have them here, I just posted different the names of the different ships and things like that, because I didn't want to be like going, oh, this is the important thing, oh, this is what I'm thinking now, because it was the second time reading, but I really enjoyed it. I really don't think it's as good a novel as Player of Games, because Player of Games you are
into the story.
You're into the story straight away, and it's told in Player of Games is told in a like A B C D like you're you've got one character, you're following one person in the same as Consider Phlebas. You've got the one main character that you do. There are a few scenes that you like a little bit separate, you know, like the woman who's on the orbital a long way away. But generally, it's one main character. You follow his story all the way through. And I think the better culture novels actually do that. They kind of concentrate more on one human level character as a way into the story. Because in this, there was too many ways into the story.
It felt quite like an experimental writing kind of. Like, he tried out something new.
I think it works.
It works, but as a first read, it is really difficult to get into it.
Yeah.
And I think this is definitely, as I obviously like said like three times now, a book to read twice, and it's fun to read through the ratings of other people here on Goodreads. There was one
are these
guy.
Your friends or are no, these no, just these, general
these,
ratings?
Just general ratings. There was this one guy who did a review in the style of the book. Yeah. Like with he puts his points into chip names and then let the chip
well,
names.
Well, let's just
talk.
Do this. Hello, this is kind of disappointed. Did you read me? Oh, do you read me? Oh, yeah, I'm not going to read all of the other bits. Like, hello, disappointed. This is still plenty of good bits. I'm another super intelligent AI entity. Well, of course you are. Bits. Let's skip the background and assume the reader knows about the culture universe. So, what do you think of its session? Not too bad. Oh, that's you. Yeah, but
Not too bad, considering the obvious problems. I mean, how is a human going to describe beings a trillion times smarter than he is?
Well, maybe he shouldn't have tried. Hello, I'm too many subplots. Can I join in? Hi, subplots! You know, yeah, that's the
it's
kind
really
of thing.
Fun.
That's by Manny on Goodreads. Yeah, yeah. I like the idea of doing a review of a book in the style of the book. I have actually done that on the SFBRP a few times. But you do, yeah. Like that is one of the problems. How do you describe it? And I think what Ian M. Banks has done with this book is going back to that first note that I shared. Like, beyond a certain point, there is simply nothing you can do, no plan you could draw up or cunning stratagem you can employ. Like, what he has done is shown you how overwhelming it is to come up against the accession. It's how overwhelming. Yeah. I know it's weird to say this. But that's it. It always keeps coming back against that. And he's written a book which is, on the first read, overwhelming. It is too difficult. It is too complex. Guess what? Ships' minds are too complex for humans.
For us,
and guess what? The accession is too complex for ships' minds.
Yeah.
That's what you've got. He's written a book which the reading experience is how it is like. Like, because we're going, like, when I was reading this, I was like, when is this happening? It's like, what's going on? And it's like, oh, all of those chapters which are interspersed between these other chapters actually all happened way earlier. Mm. And Lefid seeing the thing actually happened next. Oh, like, you could actually take this book and rearrange it so it all matched up. And you actually had it chronologically rather than unchronologically.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought I would go with the same rating as Isabel does.
What?
Because I think that's a good one. It's 3 points, 3 stars.
You're going to give it 3 stars?
Yeah, because I think it is. It has loads of good things in it. Like,
yeah.
Really fun things.
Hello, I'm too many subplots.
Yes. Yes, exactly that.
Etc, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Read Manny's. Well, of course, other people won't see it. But if you look at the page for Accession and
it's quite fun
through
to read. It also is kind of a bit like, oh yeah, I'm trying something really cool here.
Yeah.
But it is fun to read and also just reading through the reviews of other people makes a lot of sense because you get a good impression of how people read this book.
Yeah, and what not only what they think it is, but what they think it's about.
Yes.
Yes. I think it's about
I give it 3 stars now.
Okay, you're going to give it 3 stars on Goodreads. What did I give it on Goodreads? I think I gave it like... Oh, okay, I'll go down and look for it. I thought you were gonna scroll down to my review again. Yeah, scroll down. Oh, no, you know, on your review. Ah, I know it means I've got to get back to the right page again. Oh, here we go. Group. Look at you. Next session. Where is it? Ah, I've lost it again. I didn't do this very well at all. Accession. What did I give it here on Goodreads? I think I gave it 4 stars. Yeah, 4 stars. I'll give it 4 stars, which between us, it'll be a 3.5 star book because we average out our ratings when we do these books. Yeah. So let's give it, I give it 4 stars. You give it 3 stars, 3.5 stars in total, which is still a recommendation. Don't read this first. Read this culture in our order in the order that we're
so
doing.
So much more sense.
It will be too difficult. Otherwise, you've got to kind of ease yourself into the ship's minds and what ship's minds are and where they exist in 4 dimensions or whatever. Anyway, still. So that's it from us.
Episode 209.
Yeah, I think that's going to be it, isn't it? So, get to it. Join in the discussion on goodreads.com. You can find us on SFBRP listener group there. Or you can also just become my friend or follow my reviews or become Juliana's friend and follow her reviews because I can, I can see your reviews now. That's what we were just saying. It's fun to look on. Isabel is reading along with this and she rated it. There's lots of other people who have marked it as to read maybe because of this podcast. But, Ziven says the first half of Accession was a bit of a slog, but pays off in the second half. He read it in October. I like this. Other people are actually keeping up with our reading group better than we are.
Yeah.
Anyway, lots of the average review is 3.69 for SFBRP listeners, which is pretty good.
Then we are pretty good with our rating.
Yeah. Okay. So, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. You can check out my website. I've got all lots of stuff on there. My music. I've released an album recently. What do you think of my album?
Oh, it's super catchy. Yeah,
too many songs
all
stuck in your head.
All the songs stuck in your head.
Yeah, okay.
But it's good. It's really funny.
So you can find that on iTunes. It's called Bitterly Autobiographical. You can find it there. Although when you search for Luke Burridge on iTunes, of course, this podcast pops up and all its bad reviews.
Just scroll down. You'll find it.
Yeah. Well, it's actually across on the right-hand side. Anyway, you can follow me. You can see, check out my website. LukeBurridge.com/blog is the best place to keep up with all I do. Otherwise, I think that's it. Is that it?
I think so.
Okay, well, email me, luke@juggler.net as well. I reply to every email, and that's what I normally say. And, oh yes, let's do it. The next book in our reading group going to be, you have it here.
Use of Weapons.
Here. It's going to be Use of Weapons. Let's get, scroll all the way to the top. So we've done Player of Games, we've done Consider Phlebas, we've done Accession, and we're going to move on to Use of Weapons, which is super depressing. But it's going to be good. You've read this one before, Juliana?
Yep.
I've read it a few times before. This was the first ever 5-star book on the SFBRP. Let's see if I'm going to give it 5 stars again. I'm not sure. I'll see what it sounds. See what it's going to be like next. And do you have? You're going to see if you can find that in English?
No, or? I have it. Oh, you mean I should read it in English?
No, you read it in German, have you?
Yeah, I have it in German. But it might be fun to try it out in English.
Okay, well, let's see how we can get through that. And then after that, we're going to go state of the art, and inversions, and then get onto the later books: Matter, Surface Detail, Hydrogen Sonata, and finish off with Look to Windward. But yeah, let's keep this up. Let's go from really silly big ships going around to a very, very human story of Use of Weapons, which I don't even think there's any ships or ships' minds.
Are you
going
to read it on as an ebook?
If I can find it as an ebook, I've read it before as a paper book. I might if I can find it as an audiobook, maybe I'll do it as an audiobook because I've not listened to it as an audiobook.
You can read it on your new iPad.
Oh yeah, and I got myself a new iPad Mini, which is not really news, but it's gonna make ebook reading more fun probably than reading it on my iPhone. So that's it for me. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.